wants to warm up. Let's warm up.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest. This is our 45th podcast. Today is February 18, 2015. And this week we are going to talk about the living godfather of liberty, Ron Paul. Tonight we have Chelsea Camo, Eric Taylor, and myself, Kirk Pettis. Eric, do you want to take it away right away?
Sure. This is another topic that I think we've discussed for a while. We talked about, I think in a podcast, it was last February or so, we kind of talked about the dynamic between Rand Paul and Ron Paul. And Ron Paul is, you know, probably, as far as most modern libertarians are concerned, the individual that you kind of identify as the figurehead or leader of the movement. So it's a good time to talk about it. I think, Kirk, you mentioned we could hold off a little bit, but I think we always can come. We have no problem coming up with more topics, right?
Yeah, well, it's when we talk about topics, like, well, how have we not specifically talked about Ron Paul?
Yeah.
Even though we mention him all the time, but, you know, I thought it'd be a good topic just to get back to the true roots of liberty. Because no one fires me up about liberty than Ron Paul himself.
Yeah. And we probably, you know, that's definitely, he's the glue of our group. I think everybody who participates in Liberty Southwest really came to the libertarian ideal, you know, to a large part through Ron Paul. A lot of people who are on this podcast, you know, participated in the 2012 presidential election for him. And, you know, I think that's one thing that's unique about Ron Paul is I don't know, for me personally, I haven't observed any other politician that evokes the type of excitement in people that Ron Paul does.
Yeah, it was when you bring up 2012 there, I didn't know much about Ron Paul at the time, and I just remembered I was so fed up with the direction of the country and the shape of the Republican Party. I thought that we needed a counter to the big growth of government, and I thought the Republican Party was still the ticket to do so. And I went into the caucus system not for Ron Paul, I was just fired up just to be there to be active and take my part and try and start, you know, getting better people elected in a sense. And it was at these meetings that I met you guys, found out more and more about Ron Paul. His campaign was taking off, and it was pretty exciting to meet up with everyone. And we totally swept Minnesota for Ron Paul, and we were kind of one of the best states in the whole nation for Ron Paul. And it was exciting and very educational, and it was, yeah, and after that kind of fizzled out, we decided to start this Liberty movement where we just have weekly meetings, and then, you know, eventually we started this podcast. So just kind of a brief history of Liberty Southwest.
Yeah, and I think actually Minnesota was, for a variety of reasons, was the state that the Ron Paul campaign had the most success in. I mean, it has to do with the caucus system isn't used in the majority of states. So it worked out a little differently in Minnesota because of the fact, I mean, the focus of the campaign was to put a large amount of effort into caucus states. So what that means is, you know, individuals could, you know, go out to a caucus for for Minnesota, it was in February of 2012. And you go and you essentially, you know, meet in a small room that represents your precinct, and you participate in a straw poll. And, you know, say whether or not you wanted to become a delegate to your local convention. And I think a lot of people who participated in the Ron Paul campaign were, they started focusing on becoming a delegate before even these precinct caucuses took place, or organizational meetings that you know that took place a while in advance. And that's when, you know, I started meeting people in Carver County, because I mean, it's even within Minnesota, the libertarians are a small segment of the Republican Party, but they, I think, at least in my experience, they're the most knowledgeable and enthusiastic segment of the Republican Party. And, you know, that's enthusiasm and willing to learn how the caucus system works is, I think, is what really allowed Minnesota to be the most successful state. Because I think really 27% of the people in Minnesota voted for Ron Paul in that straw poll, but the actual delegate numbers at the state convention were 53% libertarian or Ron Paul supporting individuals. And it's kind of interesting how that momentum or that number just fizzled as soon as Ron Paul, you know, stepped away from the, you know, really to a certain extent from the political scene, right, Kirk?
Yeah. And well, one thing to say too, though, is I wasn't around at the time. I was in college, but, Ron, back in 2008, how they shut off all the Ron Paul people from the caucus system, made them stand outside during the, was it the state convention?
Yeah, that was in, it was in Rochester in 2008. So Ron Paul, he came to the convention to speak. Because there was a decent chance that he would accrue, you know, delegates for the national convention, and the and Republican leadership, state Republican leadership, basically said he couldn't enter it. So,
which is just crazy for a nominee to be running for president, and he shows up at the state convention and they don't let him in. That's just unheard of, in my opinion.
Right.
Well, and that's kind of why, you know, I know you kind of mentioned, like, libertarians are kind of like as a faction of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I would consider myself libertarian, but I'm sorry, I don't even want to be associated with, you know, Republicans or Democrats, either party. I mean, I feel like they're both so anti-liberty that I just don't want to be associated with them.
I think,
you know, I don't want to think about it that way. Like, I get, like, the practical, you know, use behind associating with one of the big two. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can't fault anyone, you know, for saying, like, hey, I'm a realist. I understand that third parties don't get elected, so I'm going to throw myself in one of them and try and make movements from within. I get that, and I respect that. I just wanted to maybe clarify for the record, it's stuff like that. That is exactly why I don't want to be associated with that party.
And I think the majority of people who participated in the Ron Paul presidential campaigns share the same opinion about the two-party process as you do, Chelsea. I'd say the majority of people that I met, but the common refrain was is that this is the best vehicle to even lend any type of chance for him to get elected. And I think that's, and you can, that rang pretty true to me when I noticed just the significant drop off in libertarian participation within the Republican Party after he was done, after that presidential election came and went, the second one. I think a lot of people who participated, like, we're up and out. I'm not participating in Republican politics. I was here for for one guy because of the fact that he was a genuine individual. I believe in his principles. He's a principled individual, and I don't care to participate in all the other stuff that's associated with party politics. So, in that regard, I would, you know, if I were to stereotype you, which I'm not, I would say you're a pretty typical Ron Paul supporter in that way. Wouldn't you say, Kirk?
Yeah. For me, myself, or for what?
No, just in general, the people, you know, the type of people who participated in the political process, I think a lot of them held the same, you know, view that Chelsea expressed.
Yeah, exactly. And then from that amount of people, the ones that were actually willing to be a part of the Republican Party. And what's crazy is I've always paid attention to politics all my life, and I knew nothing of Ron Paul until pretty much 2012. Mm-hmm. And because I just kind of paid always attention to mainstream political talk.
Sure.
And they always buried Ron Paul and just didn't want to shed light on him. And I think by him running in 2008, kind of lit the grass fire going. And then there was a blowback, especially from Minnesota, for not allowing him to speak, of which really I think probably helped out a lot more people run in 2012 to throw it in the Republican, you know, leadership's face in Minnesota here.
Yeah, that and the fact that the
– And he was the best candidate by far.
Yeah, and his message just spread virally throughout the internet. Like, and when you look at YouTube videos or their articles in newspapers, you'd see the most ardent supportive comments, you know, on his behalf. So, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, the attitude is, well, you can try to, you know, black them out, but we're, you know, that's just going to make, you know, a typical supporter that much more resilient and give them that much more motivation. So it was, you know, that was kind of, I think, like you said, that ended up backfiring on, you know, the powers that be to a certain extent.
Yeah, that would be my take for sure. But yeah, when you listen to this message, and I mean, how can you just not get fired up if you actually believe in, you know, in liberty, in self-reliance, and not harming other people, not going to war, you know, the whole wringing of the sponge as government to fill it up and wring it clean again is just the nature of how the government bureaucrat system set up nowadays. And he was the outlier throughout his history in as a representative.
An outlier in the fact that he was very consistent in his philosophy. And it was a philosophy, you know, for his part, that was really formalized at a pretty young age. You know, even during his college years, he was attracted to Austrian economic literature, libertarian thought, and, you know, put together a pretty coherent philosophy that made that to him made a lot of sense. And he's pretty, you know, he's a well-educated, reasoned individual, I think, that, you know, motivated him to enter into politics. And I think the big thing for him entering into politics, the point that really provided the strong motivation was was when Nixon decided to remove the gold standard, and that, you know, motivated him to enter politics. And, you know, he was concerned about, you know, and if you look back through his, you know, since then, it's well founded. He was concerned about the devaluing of the dollar and how that would hurt the middle and lower class. And that's, you know, that's turned out to be true. You know, when, you know, at that time when he, you know, when he had the moment where he said, I'm going to try for Congress, probably won't make it, but I'm going to try, you know, and really run on, you know, core libertarian principles, gold was valued at $35 an ounce. Now it's valued at around $1,300 an ounce. And that's an indication of how much weaker the currency has gotten as a result of removing the gold standard. And, you know, he's been pretty consistent in referencing that. And I think for a lot of people who are interested in his, you know, political philosophy, that's, you know, that's one of the more important aspects of, you know, of what he has to say is, you know, the Federal Reserve and, you know, how they do control the currency and inflation and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Would, what do you think of doing that clip just to get us fired up?
The it's kind of a long undeniable, clip, but... undeniable clip?
Yeah, the kind of the trailer one.
Sure.
We could stop it.
Millions
if, you know,
of tax dollars are spent on this type of computer surveillance, a disgusting procedure for a professed free society.
Eric, just say what year he's saying this to. Maybe, because this is a history of Ron Paul. It's kind of throughout his time. I think this first clip was from 1980, 84.
This first clip, and I can wind it back, is 1988. So if you'd like me to just to stop after each clip, and this is actually a Robert Downey interview, and it's interesting if you want to look this up online, just Google Robert Downey and Ron Paul, and it's pretty funny how animated Ron Paul gets on there and how he's just ridiculed throughout the, you know, the whole interview. I mean, he just have you watched that? Have you watched the full clip?
No, I never have.
Oh, it's priceless.
But here, I think you should just say what year each part of the clip is coming up. Just give people a feel for how long he's been saying and staying true to the message.
Sure. Yeah. So we'll start again here. I believe the first is 1988.
Millions of tax dollars are spent on this type of computer surveillance, a disgusting procedure for a professed free society.
So that's 1984, and that... you know, statement you could say has been, you know, validated by the Edward Snowden leaks, right?
Yeah. And that was in Congress too, right? When he said that?
Yep, 1984.
Yeah.
I'll go again.
They're overstepping the bound. Just the other day, they walked into somebody's house. They suspected he was a drug dealer. He was using his automatic selector. And then police marched in, and they said, it looked like a gun, after they killed the man. In America! Is that what America's all about? I'd say no. We want privacy.
Less government.
You were talking about that before the show, right, Kurt?
Yeah, remote control. Cops barging in. And, you know, obviously they'd have to deal with a lot of stuff, but is that really what... an aspect of liberty is where it's pretty much trading security for lack of freedoms. Yeah. More security for getting rid of freedoms, but anyways.
And that's something that's becoming somewhat self-evident in various situations now, right?
Well, we do have a seatbelt law.
Yeah. This is 1991. Here we go.
For individual liberty, get the government off our backs, a more sensible foreign policy.
I'm very disappointed that so far in this Congress we have not yet seen any sincere effort to cut any spending. There's something wrong here that could and should be adjusted with decreased spending, not raising taxes, and not further robbing the Social Security Trust Fund.
The more we threat, the more we intimidate, the more we want to bomb people, the more we're leading into another fiasco like Vietnam. We trade with Vietnam now. That's a much better way than trying to impose our will on Vietnam by going over there and dropping bombs. So I would say that this just points out again that we have a very, very poor foreign policy in the Middle East.
On that clip, that portion, the best part of it is his comb over.
Oh, he's always been a very sharp, well-dressed man.
He is. When you think style, you think Ron Paul.
Or the Albert Einstein of politics.
That was 1998, Chelsea. And that's, you know, well, but he could argue.
What was important, I think you said it was 97 when he was talking about lack of cutting spending, and that's when the Republicans took back the House, which controls the purse strings, and spending did not go down at all.
I mean, it doesn't matter which party it is. They all like spending the money, don't they?
Well, I think if you had a private conversation with Ron Paul, he'd tell you that's the direct cause of the Federal Reserve.
Where you can't even
slow it down. You have to increase spending year to year, which is the blowback of ever instituting the Federal Reserve in the first place.
Well, I mean, okay, so I understand, you know, the whole idea of them being able to control, to inflate the dollar, to devalue it. I understand all of that. But how does he say that the Federal Reserve is then linked to forcing the government to spend money? Is it as a result of the devaluation of the dollar? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, they buy – the Federal Reserve is the largest holder of Treasury bonds.
Government-issued debt. Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They monetize.
Because in exchange for the Federal Reserve notes, they
single-handedly empower, government debt.
And I get that, but that doesn't. I wouldn't say that accounts for all of the increases in spending, like the massive spending that we've seen. I mean,
that's the nature of a privately held fiat currency,
right? But
I'm
saying,
if you pay interest as a debt, you can never have enough money to pay off the debt in the first place, so that's why you kind of have to increase supply every year.
But we still have to account for the fact that our government is growing and getting bigger and bigger, and now we have, more departments and more agencies and, greater scope. So it's not just a matter, of accrued interest, but it's also a matter of the expansion of our government.
Well, yeah, it gives the government an excuse to expand. And I mean, but essentially it can all, you can never contract because of how our fiat currency is through the Federal Reserve. And therefore the government always has to expand, even though they argue that we're increasing our services.
Well, you can contract the Federal Reserve.
But as a whole, as a lump total.
Well, it can't. If Federal Reserve increases interest rates, that contracts the money supply. More individuals save takes money out of circulation.
It depends on the banking's reserves number as well, though.
Well,
if people
are
saving, the banks just sit there and loan that much more money out.
I mean, just generally, that's how the Federal Reserve controls both private sector and public sector monetary growth and contraction is through interest rates.
From an economic standpoint, everything's been thrown out the window in the last 5 years. But
well, not really. Interest rates are 0.25% for one year treasuries. That's what they're set at. They've had as close to zero interest rates since the 1998 financial crisis, and they've continued to have that. They had very low interest rates, which stoked the housing crisis. Now the contention that a lot of people have in economic circles is we had the low interest rates that stoked the stock market bubble. You had cheap money that went into the easiest assets. You had low interest rates, and these are all controlled by the Federal Reserve, and this affects both private sector and public sector growth. You have low interest rates that stoked the housing boom and bust. Now you have low interest rates that are stoking a government/housing boom and eventual bust. So, eventually and this is something that, Ron Paul is – certainly spoke to, is if you had a commodity-backed system, you wouldn't have the ability to grow government or grow bubbles like you do with the Federal Reserve. And right now, they're at a they haven't had interest rates this low, this much cheap money ever. And the stock market has gone from, I think the S&P has gone from 6,700 to 18,000, in the course of, you know, of, what has it been, 7 years, a little under 7 years. And government growth has gone, you know, job growth or size of agencies has gone up exponentially. We're talking, I just alluded to this number, I really wasn't even thinking about it too much last week. We're talking about how the Department of Education's budget has gone from $30 billion in 2009 to $75 billion. And those correlate directly into jobs and growth of various agencies. So you could argue that, yeah, the Federal Reserve does, you know, impact that substantially.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the idea, the idea of the Federal Reserve, that was part of the selling, you know, that was one of the selling points, is that they could, you know, manipulate the system in such a way to protect people from booms and busts. But what's interesting is that their manipulation has actually caused booms and busts.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
It hurts the weakest part of the population that doesn't know how to protect themselves. You know, savers.
Exactly, or can't afford to.
Right. Yeah. So it hurts the weakest. The smart money can always cope with it. You know, because they're mm-hmm. in touch with, you know, government agencies, with the Federal Reserve. Banks are linked into the Federal Reserve. So it's a, you know, Not a fair system by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, well, another mandate that the Fed institutes as well is to never allow deflation. I mean, they want to see, I think, what is it, 2% inflation yearly?
Yeah, but that's creative accounting. They exclude on that 2% inflation the cost of housing, cost of food, cost of energy. And
yes, that may be true. But what I'm saying is, yeah, they have two mandates, money supply and inflation.
Sure.
And those things can be counterintuitive and counterproductive at the same time to institute, you know, through a pure economic model. And so it's a totally asinine setup.
Yeah. So, Ron, I think you guys can correct me if it's wrong, but his core economic stance has been link it to gold, link it to silver, the currency, and allow the free market to set interest rates, and that gets rid of moral hazard. Moral hazard is basically when you create low interest rates, money will find its way into the asset class that's easiest to place risky bets on, and, you know,
like the stock market,
speculate within, or the housing market, or the, you know, SNL, you know, bubble that happened in the late 80s.
The Federal Reserve doesn't mandate the interest rates that the banks give out.
Yeah, they do.
The interest rate is for what they loan the money to the banks. So therefore, the banks, it's pretty close. You know, it's correlates to a profit.
Yeah, they generally have a 3-4% margin between what they get and what they put out.
So, but really, it's not directly to what the housing thing. The housing mandate was different for different regulations government instituted, as in just state your income. And
yeah, lending standards and interest rates. It was like a perfect cocktail.
Yeah.
Cheap money.
So that was more from the government, in my opinion, but coupled with the Fed. But
yeah,
I don't know. But anyways, we should just continue with Ron Paul.
Yeah. Okay.
I wish the Congress would address the unconstitutionality of presidents waging war. That, to me, is a lot more serious than Monica Lewinsky, let me tell you.
The corporations are in bed with the government.
Peace and harmony can never be achieved by bombs and intimidation.
Mr. Speaker, over the last 3 to 4 years, I've come to the floor on numerous occasions trying to sound a warning about both our foreign policy and our monetary policy. The cause is the Federal Reserve. The problem is the Federal Reserve has been granted authority that is unconstitutional to go and counterfeit money. And until we recognize that and deal with that, we will continue to have financial problems.
The Federal Reserve credit created during the last 8 months has not stimulated economic growth in technology or the industrial section. But a lot of it ended up in the expanding real estate bubble. This too will burst, as all bubbles do. During the next decade, the American people will become poorer and less free. I do not see any reason whatsoever to take young men and young women and send them 6,000 miles off to a land to attack a country that has not committed any aggression against this country. War is not popular. People get killed and body bags end up coming back. I don't want anybody's legs shot off for some reason that is not justified and it's not a declared war. I think that should be the litmus test of everybody in this country and everybody over on the hill too. If this war is worth fighting, are you willing to go and lose your legs, lose your life, or send your kids or send your grandkids? Well, our
I think that's a good statement to reference. And one of the points, you know, that I've heard the most negativity associated with on the part of a typical conservative who doesn't support Ron Paul, and that is that he doesn't believe in a strong foreign policy in the Middle East.
Or almost anywhere in the world.
Right. And it's amazing to me how unable,
ignorant.
Well, just not even ignorant, how unable this type of individual seems to be to even listen to the fact that, you know, this foreign policy that he discusses and the concept of blowback, which is when you mess with someone's property or you meddle with a country's politics and you put your sanctioned leader, who then becomes an oppressor to that people, in power, and the individuals know that doesn't have any way of building animosity towards the United States. And I think that's been one of the, you know, one of the keys, you know.
Eric, you're not getting it. They hate us because we're free, because of our freedom.
yeah, that's what it is. You know, it has nothing to do with the, you know, us oppressing them.
These are barbarians. They don't understand our true order of life and the respect that bureaucracy gives us and the rights of law. And the rights granted by our governments. I mean, that's worth fighting anywhere in the world for.
it's just mind blowing to me because, I mean, you know, for us, it just makes sense. But for so many people, it's so counterintuitive. You know, you need to be there to protect the country, and the only way I've been able to rationalize this is that it's a result of just being manipulated by propaganda, government propaganda.
Constant hashing of the media, of the two-party systems, keep you in a binary world, and got to stay in those L and R's. Straight from
I think it's interesting, you know. With the two-party system, people are given an illusion of a choice. And I call it an illusion because they feel like there really is no choice. You know, regardless as to whether, you know, it's the Democrat speaking or the Republican speaking, they mask themselves as, oh, no, you've got this choice over here, you've got that choice over there, and they're two different things. But I think the proof is really in the pudding. I mean, regardless of who's in power, we see government expansion, we see ridiculous amounts of spending, we see aggression, and a very, I mean, I hate even call it a strong foreign policy because that almost has a positive connotation, but we see the same things regardless of who's in power, yet people are given this idea that they have a choice. So I think that's why it's taken so long for people to really get on board with someone who isn't like that, because they think that they have a choice and they think that they're standing up for the things that they believe, and they actually believe they're going to get them. But they're not. We get so caught up in, you know, what the politicians say to us and in the propaganda that we're given, and we think that these people are really trying. It's just, oh, the other side is keeping them from, you know, accomplishing their goals. No, they're accomplishing their goals. You know, they're getting more and more funding, and they're robbing the wealth from the lower and middle classes over and over and over again. They're getting what they want. It's not like they're trying really hard and not getting there. They just keep us squabbling about little petty arguments, and keep us, you know, satisfied, distracted in those arguments, and keep us from focusing on the actual issues at hand and then the possible solutions.
And I think, well, I know that's been referenced by Ron Paul many times. And again, that's just speaking truth to power, essentially, which is very attractive to a certain subset of the population. And, you know, that's where his support has come from, his ability to just basically call a spade a spade. Go ahead and continue here.
Country become freer, richer, safer, and more peaceful? Or will we continue to suffer from lost civil liberties, a stagnant economy, terrorist threats, and an expanding war in the Middle East and Central Asia? Is it not possible that George Washington's admonition to avoid entangling alliances is sound advice even today? Both candidates supported the war in Iraq and the continuation of it. Both supported the Patriot Act and its controversial attack on personal privacy.
And I think that speaks directly to what you just referenced, right, Chelsea?
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yep.
True patriot. You know, regardless.
Go ahead.
Oh, regardless of party, we're seeing, you know, our liberties being taken away under the guise of, you know, protection or necessity. We're seeing a continuation of, you know, our involvement in affairs that we shouldn't be involved in. Us trying to push the American way of life on other countries because we think we know what's best, right? And it doesn't matter which political party it is. They're all doing the same thing.
Well, they talk a different game, but essentially nothing changes. Just like Barack Obama said he was going to end the wars, change the Patriot, you know, repeal the Patriot Act, shut down Guantanamo. Those are kind of the key issues that everyone was up in arms about during, you know, George W. Bush's term. And then, yeah, nothing changes.
Yeah. Yeah, people were livid. They're like, we need to get out of there. And, you know, and they
people
were
ready to throw down fighting about it all back to all the Democrats were. They were just up in arms about
it. Yeah.
They were really shout and get in your face about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, once their guys
have,
that don't matter anymore. Puts those people.
And it's like, oh, wait. No, we can't get out. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, actions speak a whole lot louder than words. And I think that if we stop allowing the snake to whisper in our ear, and if we just focus on what's actually happening and we look at the actions instead of listening to the bullshit propaganda, we can start to really see the truth through action, not through words. And I think that, you know, by having somebody that's out there willing to call a spade, it can maybe help some people awaken to the fact that this is, you know, what's happening.
And there is, to be fair, there is a, you know, even within the political class, there is a growing liberty wing of the, and it is within the Republican Party, of people who are, you know, carrying on the message. And they do get attacked for their affiliation, you know, with Ron Paul, you know, most notably his son, Rand Paul, and to a lesser extent, Thomas Massey and Justin Amash. There are, you know, people of merit and substance who, you know, speak to power, and the political ramification for those people is they just don't you know, their committee assignments aren't too prestigious. They are kind of ostracized by party leadership. But the, you know, what still seems to be happening, and this is one of the reasons why I think it's not a completely lost cause to participate in politics or in the liberty movement within politics, is that there are more and more of these politicians that are getting elected. And, you know, that is one way that you can potentially influence the system, is by having, you know, principled individuals that, you know, are there and that can convey what's going on in government to the public and, act on the general good. So whereas before, you know, you had just Ron Paul for a long time. I mean, you have probably, you know, even in the House, you have, you know, in the Liberty Caucus, you have, you know, 12 to 15 people there, and, you know, arguably three or four in the Senate. But that's a lot more that, you know, that are around now than were around just, you know, 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. So there is, you know, there is that. There are positives in that area too. Are you going to say something, Kirk?
No.
Okay, I'll continue.
We'll repeal the Patriot Act is what they will do.
Both candidates supported increased spending in almost all categories. I'm the most conservative member here. I have voted, you know, against more spending and wasting government than anybody else.
Freedom, prosperity, and peace.
Just come home. We just marched in.
We have allowed our nation to be overtaxed and overregulated and overrun by bureaucrats. The founders would be ashamed of us for what we're putting up with.
A system designed to protect individual liberty will have no punishments for any group and no privileges. Today, I think inner city folks and minorities are punished unfairly in the war on drugs.
I think this is not a consequence of free markets. What's happening is there's transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the wealthy. This comes about because of a monetary system that we have. When you inflate a currency or destroy a currency, the middle class gets wiped out. So the people who get to use the money first, which is created by the Federal Reserve System, benefit. So the money gravitates to the banks and to Wall Street. So that's why you have more billionaires than ever before. Today, this country is in the middle of a recession for a lot of people. Michigan knows about it. Poor people know about it. The middle class knows about it. Wall Street doesn't know about it. Washington, D.C. doesn't know about it, but it's because of the monetary system and the excessive spending. As long as we live beyond our means, we are destined to live beneath our means, and we have lived beyond our means because we are financing a foreign policy that is so extravagant and beyond what we can control, as well as the spending here at home, and we're depending on the creation of money out of thin air, which is nothing more than debasement of the currency. It's counterfeit, and it is a natural, predictable consequence that you're going to have people benefit from it and other people suffer. So if you want a healthy economy, you have to study monetary theory and figure out why it is that we're suffering. And everybody doesn't suffer equally, or this wouldn't be so bad. It's always the poor people, those on retired incomes, that suffer the most. But the politicians and those who get to use the money first, like the military industrial complex, they make a lot of money and they benefit from it.
That's a good point too, right there. There is the audit the Fed bill actually is currently in the Senate. It's going to go to a vote and probably has the votes. It did pass the House last time, didn't pass the Senate, but it has the votes to pass the Senate and the House. And especially over the last week, so Rand Paul is a co-sponsor, Campaign for Liberty pushed out the bill through Rand Paul, and the Federal Reserve has gone on an extreme offensive towards Rand Paul, discrediting his economic credentials, his understanding of the financial system, basically stating that they are audited yearly by the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, that all their transactions are on the books and fully transparent and auditable, and that they deem any type of audit as a result of this bill passing as unnecessary and opens up the Federal Reserve to political manipulation, and that they view themselves as a quasi-political independent entity that shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't act at the behest of the Congress. And they basically, they're kicking and screaming the hardest as this bill gets the closest it's ever been to passing, which is kind of funny in a way.
Yeah, well, they're a private for-profit organization, which is, it's scary. I mean, I would go out on a limb and say that, you know, conservatively, 90% of the population, and that's, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt, I would say 90% of the population doesn't realize that the Federal Reserve is not the government.
Right.
They are a private, for-profit organization.
But what they do say is our profits go almost entirely back to the U.S. Treasury. That's what they do say in their defense. Like when they're attacked for the for-profit angle, they're like, well, but our profits on our interests and other financial transactions are remitted to the Treasury almost immediately.
But, you know, you'd have to say, well, at what point of profits, though? I mean, is this after, you know, this has got to be after, you know, salaries and all kinds of other things.
Sure.
You know, so we would have to see exactly, you know, what number they're coming up with,
which,
you know, in order to then, yeah, go ahead.
Which is inaudible at this point.
Right, right. And so that's key, because when you talk about accounting, you know, there's a whole lot of activity that happens before that last net income figure is derived, you know, so. You know, you could spend all day long and giving people, you know, bonuses and ridiculous amounts of compensation, and then say, oh, but we give all of our profits away. We just make sure that those profits are as close to zero as possible. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of manipulation that you could make, before then handing over the profits. So, I feel like we deserve to know those things. You know, with an organization that has such a great control over our entire economy and way of life, it's just so significant that, you know, I feel, well, I obviously support the audit of the Fed, if you hadn't noticed, but.
Right.
But I think, you know, it's just key for people to understand that they're not the government, that they're a separate entity. And most people don't know that.
In that fact, there was an article written on this earlier this week in Politico. That singular motivation, specifically tying into, you know, it's the groundwork, you know, in the Paul family was laid by Ron Paul. Rand Paul is making that a cornerstone of his presidential campaign. Is shortly to be announced presidential campaign. And that idea that he wants to audit the Federal Reserve, and he's close to getting bill passed through the House and Congress, and who knows if Obama will sign it or not, but he's very close. I mean, there's a very real chance, has provided the fundraising opportunities of a lifetime for Jeb Bush. He's raised an enormous amount of money from Wall Street, investment banks, entities associated with the Federal Reserve, who do not want to see him win a presidency because of the direct threat. You know, as shown in the rhetoric that the Federal Reserve governors have expressed over the last week, and the talk amongst Wall Street has said, we do not need the Federal Reserve to become politicized when they are essentially an autonomous organization that many argue, and the reason why the audit is being demanded, many people believe is hurting the global financial system and the U.S. public in general. So it's kind of interesting as this audit gets closer to being approved, how much force is being pushed back politically against it.
Sounds like a great topic down the road here.
Yep. All right, I'll continue this up.
Our job to check up and find what the Federal Reserve has done, audit them, and find out who their buddies are that they're taking care of.
It's trillions of dollars we're spending on these wars.
President Paul! President Paul! President Paul! President Paul!
So that's the end of that clip.
Let me ask you something. At the end of the other clip that I was hoping to be able to play, I don't know if we're going to have time, but or maybe it was in the middle, I don't know. But he says something, I would rather live poorer and live more free than having the government dictate what I can and cannot do. Are you guys willing to risk the collapse of the monetary system to live more free?
Well, I mean,
it's an honest question because it is something that can happen. It can bring down Wall Street. It can bring down the finances our country is run on. Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, if you open it up to more freedom, you know, yes, is there a risk posed in the short term? I believe so. But, you know, if we truly have freer markets, I think that in the long term, you know, we'll benefit. And so it's a matter of, are we willing to sacrifice hardship now for a greater payoff later, you know, a more sustainable, freer life? And a freer life or a more prosperous life for, you know, our prosperity.
Well, that's where I think the Liberty Camp message is lacking, is that if we were able to institute the things that we wanted to, it would collapse a lot of the systems that are created on the bubble of government and the mm-hmm. direct dealings of government and the exchange of the money that's just in a circular system flowing in and out of Washington, D.C. as a direct result from the Federal Reserve. And it's that power system. And if the audit the Fed happened and it caused a huge Wall Street panic, the Fed panics, without the roots of liberty and the knowledge of the first principles and the self-reliance that is necessary, I don't think anything good will come of it. It will actually turn into more and more tyrannical government in the long run, because the measures that will be perpetrated and propagandized to the public will cry out for a larger and larger government to even have more and more control of something that would be better than the Fed. Is what it will be.
Well,
and that's probably one of the attractive, because one of the things that Ron Paul has talked about is, you know, not a wholesale change of the financial system or the currency that, you know, is used to operate the financial system, the U.S. dollar. He's talked about introducing competing currencies and to move away from the dollar in a gradual, you know, in a gradual process. And I think that's one of the, amongst especially libertarians, techno-libertarians, that's one of the attractive qualities behind Bitcoin, is that it's a fiat currency that has some type of, I mean, there's a backing, there's a control mechanism to how much it can be created that, you know, can potentially work in tandem with the U.S. dollar, gain trust. It is gaining trust within financial institutions and a financial system that could potentially restrain the money supply and bring about, you know, a freer market, a market that could be dictated on real world interest rates and transactions and that type of thing. I think a disruptive just pulling away from any type of currency like you're talking about, Kirk, would result in catastrophe. It would be very difficult for a lot of people to, you know, a lot of industries and a lot of people to handle that.
Yeah, I don't think people are prepared for it. I think people think we live in a democracy. So if the shit hit the fan and come elections, we'd all be all of a sudden entered into a democracy era, and the tyranny that will arise from that would not be good without the backbone of liberty message out there that people can comprehend and have and thought through. And that's why we, and that's essentially why we continued our group. I mean, we wanted to stay active and be vocal in the community and you know, try and be a message in the headwind and the tidal force against us, but it's not a sexy topic to talk about, and it's not something to do. It's just something to question always, because it's a reality of life that with coming disasters, usually governments can come and go at any time, and they don't take long to be replaced or systems. So a crumbling of one system usually is replaced rather quickly, and if you know, who's to say things will become more and more free, or you know, with the reliance on the Constitution, or better yet, the universal principles of life and the pursuit of happiness that, you know, that were the basis of the Constitution. If those things are thrown out the window, that is a pretty damning situation that is my greater fear than anything else.
Right.
So you're afraid that, you know, if what we have crumbles, that it could be replaced by something even worse, is what you're afraid of.
It's what always happens.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because people
always
just
happens.
It's not on, yeah, it's what always happens. that's why they create that's why I believe terrorism exists. Create the catastrophe to rise to new solutions and more control over our lives. And
that's the shock doctrine. Yeah, kind of, yeah. And using fear to manipulate and distract and...
Yeah, so I think...
What you really want.
But the good thing is Ron Paul lit a fire under a whole lot of people, and I am one of them. And as, you know, it doesn't take... I'm not saying a majority of people need to understand this, but at least as big of a minority as possible. I mean, I just fear, I don't even know if 5% even believe in the values that our country was founded upon.
Well,
and without 5%,
I
think we're pretty damned.
You know, I think they do. I just don't, I think that they've been distracted by, you know, the two-party system and the messages and the conversations that those two sides present. You know, they've really controlled the conversation up until this point, and they still do control a majority of the conversation. And when you control the topics that people, you know, are talking about, you can really keep secret or keep under the rug the really important issues at hand. And I find that when I talk to people on a person-to-person basis, that a lot of people do share a lot of these values, the value of, you know, respecting each other's right to live according, you know, to their own belief system and to have the liberty to do so as long as they're doing no harm to others. A lot of people really believe that, and a lot of people truly respect that. They just get, you know, unfortunately caught up in the conversation that's controlled by the two-party system. So we don't get to have as many of those conversations about, you know, the things that are truly important, you know, about those ideals and those principles, because that's not the conversation that the two-party system wants to have. It's not the conversation they want us to be having.
Well, they constantly play lip service to it. But that's all it is. There's never any depth to the matter.
No.
Right.
Yeah, the liberty movement or libertarian movement is probably the most threatening ideological movement that's, you know, come up against, you know, the established political system in quite some time. I mean, it's, you know, as far as the entrenched bureaucracy is concerned, there's, you know, nothing more they'd like to see it somehow diminished or disbanded.
Yeah, well, and I just say people should be allowed to opt out. There's no reason you have to force your neighbors into a system that you want them to live under. To me, that's just totally asinine. And it, And when I look at the world, I see other worlds that I would not fear as much let's just say there's a huge catastrophe waiting for us a year down the road or 2 years down the road. I fear what America will become from that far more than any other country in the world. That I think the rest of the world doesn't rely on the government as much as America's really do. And I don't think people have any idea of what is how much our economy and everything actually revolves around our government. And I think our politicians are the proof of that by how they speak. And it's everything. If you listen to Obama, Hillary Clinton, you didn't build that. You know, it's all government's job. You know, that comes from Republicans are all corporate welfare, and it's just a sad state of affairs to where I think the majority of Americans just subconsciously believe in government and then believe that the government is. The American government is where we derive our rights from. And so when a catastrophe happens or a crisis happens, they're going to cry out for the government to fix it. I don't see how that can even be entered into a liberty-minded concept.
Well, that's why we're here, isn't it? I mean, it's why we're talking and we're spurring the conversation and, you know, in trying to find some comrades out there that say, you know, we don't like the status quo. We don't like what's happening. We don't like the direction we're going in. And we've got some ideas for maybe how we can do things differently, maybe ways that we can do things better. Before the show, we were kind of talking about how what is that app that you were talking about, how rather than, you know, calling the government
and on a app.
Yeah. So building your own community of friends and family and neighbors to call on in case of an emergency. So we're seeing many different instances where people are saying, let's be reliant on one another. Let's lean on one another and let's support ourselves. And I think we are seeing a trend of that. You know, it might not be, you know, some 50% of the population or anything, but we are seeing some trends like that. And if we can just let people know that we're out there, and if we can start to find out that there are people out there who believe like we do, the more we can come together, the more powerful we can become, and maybe the more changes we can make.
It just goes back to when I read books that have been written 100, 200 years ago, maybe even longer. It's more on the ideas of principles. It's not how the English has changed it into pulling out clips or sources of other books and proving it that way. It's more of it's talking about principles and ideas and the roots of the knowledge that trying to be discovered at hand. And I don't know. There's just the root cause of things just doesn't seem to be discussed these days. But and that's why I would just I get scared by when like how you said, Chelsea, don't take this personally, but it's like, well, we have better answers. But who are you answering for? I mean, you're going to answer for your neighbors or what? I mean, you can only live your life and the principles, and everything's an experiment, the American experiment about the liberty, about keeping liberty as long as we can. And, as we're losing our liberties, we're not even, it's hardly on the forefront of discussing the principles at hand that granted us our liberties in the first place. And it's just worrisome and bothersome that people still look for the government to create the solution.
But think about this. Think about this. So our whole topic tonight, we were talking about Ron Paul, and you said he was kind of who woke you up to this, right? Now look at what one person can do, and how that can then spin off to, you know, creating, you know, Liberty Southwest and creating a group, and how different politicians can stand up and say, you know what, I agree, and that you can really start to get some momentum. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's all about people standing up and say, here are the principles I hold dear. Do you share these as well? And people will stand up and say, you know what, that rings true. That really does ring true. And we become distracted, and I realize that now. And thank you for reminding me of that. And then we can stand together and hope that others will join us.
And that's happening more and more, I think. There are more and more people. They're becoming awake to the fact that there are things that need to be addressed, and, you know, inequality that's created by certain actions in various institutions. And, you know, I think, like, all other movements or ideas that reach a critical mass, that it's important to, if you understand, and this is something that again, Ron Paul has said, if you understand a topic and you to the extent that you can articulate it easily and engage other people, you kind of owe it to yourself to do so. And, you know, this is one of those things that if you can distill it down to its basics, it's pretty easy to understand. And it's, you know, something that can be conveyed, you know, in an easy way. And there's no reason, you know, why it shouldn't gain more and more importance, you know, and the, you know, conversation both in the United States and abroad. I think that's happening. And to me, that's one of the things that makes participating interesting, and it'll be interesting to see. I still think we're, you know, I'm very much an optimist about, you know, how libertarian philosophy can affect, you know, both, you know, day-to-day lives at a local level and, you know, economic and political realities at other levels. And I think it'll be pretty interesting to watch what happens, you know, in the future. And I personally think it will, I mean, there'll be pushback, but I think even the most ardent skeptic will be pleasantly surprised, you know, in our lifetimes at least.
Well, should we wrap up?
Sure. Do you want, Kirk, didn't you, you want to play the Amy Allen song? Just kind of lead us out. And then I'll switch over to, what is the name?
The song?
The song, which I'm looking for. Yeah, it's Ron Paul. It's called the Ron Paul Anthem.
I figure that'd be a great way to go out tonight. But, well, it's been a fun conversation about Ron Paul, and we didn't get nearly as far as we thought we would, but time is of the essence. So with that, it's been Eric Taylor, Chelsea Kamal, and myself, Kirk Pettis, and we're all glad you were here with us tonight. This was our 45th issue.
Have a good night, and I'll
have a good night.
Play the outro here.
Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! Good morning, America! Rise and shine! Wake up! Rise and shine! Ron Paul! Save our constitutional rights! Ron Paul! We're not gonna give up the fight! Ron Paul!
forgery. Booyah! Dropping off phones, breaking down our doors, waging on the people a civil war. Booyah! Quit jobs and bring home no pay. Booyah! IRS takes it all away. We struggle, slave, pay the ransom. Booyah! Ron Paul, president.
Ron Paul!
Save our constitutional rights.
Ron Paul!
The Constitution, and that's what we ought to be doing. The system that we have today is ripping off the middle class and the poor. Can you imagine how great a nation we'd have if we didn't have the Federal Reserve System printing all this money?